This is CliffCentral.com.
It's Sigala and Paloma Faith with Lullaby. It's also 4 minutes after eight on a Tuesday morning. Now, some people have these amazing lives. They have access to just about everyone who ever comes to South Africa that's important. And one of those people is the guy who was running the presidential guest house in Pretoria for a long time. And he's also a chef of some enormous repute. He assisted in coordinating and chefed at the 1994 inauguration of President Mandela.
Good morning. Yeah.
Hey, morning, man. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. We've met before, though, Brett.
We've met a few times on different occasions and that.
Brett, lads, look at this guy.
I did the, the last time I met you was when I did the Idols, the catering and that to the VIP and everything.
God, what a come down for you from serving presidents to have to serve those fucking idiots. You know?
Well, I've met people like you, so it's a bonus, eh?
I mean, really. But I think I even went to a thing at the presidential guest house once, and that's an impressive place.
No, it's absolutely beautiful.
It's a beautiful old house. It's there's also Herbert Baker or something, isn't it?
It's very much Herbert Baker.
Yeah. It's got the most magnificent view to the north.
Correct, yes. It overlooks.
It's got this gorgeous north-facing... Wasn't it... Didn't Princess Alice live there? For a time. Something like that.
There was, then you know more than me,
Duke
sorry.
Duke of Connaught or something. Anyway, that place is... It's like a gem. And very few people get to see it because it's all in the presidential estate in Pretoria. I mean, everybody knows about the actual house the president lives in.
Yes.
Right. And then they don't necessarily know that there's this other estate. There's a golf course.
Correct.
It's all part of this. Ben, you've never played on that golf course.
No, Gareth, I don't think so.
Because the president hasn't invited
you. Not that important yet.
But there are gardens. There's this huge banqueting hall in there. There's the guest house itself, which I want you to tell me about in a moment. I mean, it's quite something. And you were in charge there for a long time.
Yeah, I was there from 94 to 2000.
Wow, man. I mean, those are like the glory years as well, because you got to be there for the Mandela presidency and for much of the Thabo Mbeki presidency. That's great.
It was, but it was scary.
What do you mean?
You must remember now, when I got there in 94, obviously the houses where the ministers stayed were well kept and looked after. The president's house was well kept after, but the guest house itself was extremely run down.
Was it?
It's this beautiful, beautiful, like white elephant, hey, that all the crap that was in everybody else's houses and that.
They just threw it in there.
They all just threw it in there. And when, the ANC came in, the National Party didn't know where to put them. They said, wow, poof, let's put them in that house. So when we got there, it was extremely run down and it wasn't maintained at all.
Oh, that's interesting to me because it's such a beautiful house. You would think that there was always really lovely furniture in it. They would have used it to house all the important people that came to visit from every other country. I mean, that's what it ended up being used for. But before that, what? It was just a storeroom, you say?
Just to the most of the paintings that were on the wall, the tapestries, the curtains and that. It sounds very funny. I mean, controversial today, but it was like a colonial house.
Yeah.
Where all the old English paintings were hanging.
Right.
It almost like it skipped a generation. It was sort of the English and then doof, went over to the ANC.
Well, I mean, maybe that's what saved a lot of that stuff.
Correct. No, no, very, very
because
true.
Otherwise it would have gone to rack and ruin because they would have put up kak apartheid, art, and you can imagine. We've seen some of that stuff. We have.
No, we have. No, it's true. Well, that was a thing. So when we got there, and the most ironic part is when we arrived there, and that obviously there was a bit of a struggle issue between who was going to stay where and who was going to do what.
Oh, really?
And President Mandela was happy. He said, look, I'm happy. I'll stay here until, I mean, obviously he gets his permanent residence, which was Houghton. And it was still then, in those days, it was a fight to get the place fixed up and get this changed and that restored.
Well, because you had to get money, right?
No, there was money. It was just a battle because people didn't accept what was the change and everything was going over. I mean, in my book, I wrote about it. I don't mention names out of respect for people, but I mean, to get the house painted, we had to go to minister level to get permission to get the house painted.
You know, a thing like that shouldn't be something a minister should ever think about. They've got to make important decisions, and painting a house should be something that should happen.
Yeah, but it's all the morons underneath.
Yeah.
Do you understand? People that just refuse to move on.
Are these guys and girls who were left over from the old regime?
That's correct, yeah.
And they were just kind of making themselves important by standing in the way of things happening?
It was. It was almost like they had to be loud to be recognized.
Jeez. So you're telling me that in 1994, nobody wanted this house?
Correct. I promise you.
How many bedrooms are there?
Upstairs there was 5 suites. Then there was still the sort of the West Wing where we stayed in, which there was 3 rooms, and there was still another 2 rooms for security. That was just upstairs. It was massive, absolutely massive and beautiful. And eventually, as I said, it went up to minister level, and Aziz Pahat, we actually got him in and said to him, help us. And that's how we got to paint the house. I mean, come on now. It was...
Yeah, it must have been very frustrating, but it also must have been quite exciting. So first of all, why did you care so much? Because a lot of people who get into a position in a transition like that are in it for themselves. And it seems to me like you had a genuine interest in like looking after this place and in trying to create an environment where our official international guests would have been treated really well, where they would have felt like, you know, this is a country of some repute. This is a country of Nelson Mandela. This is a country of international acclaim. A lot of people wouldn't have felt that kind of that sensitivity to those sorts of things, and a lot of people would have just tried to get the job done in as quick and cheap a way as possible, and probably have put guests up in hotels and things like that. Why was it important to you that we had a presidential guest house?
Well, first of all, I'm sure it's a very kitschy way of saying it, but yet, once you've met President Mandela and you've been in his company and things like that, that strong aura and magnetism he had, and you just have to meet him to realize who we are and what we are. And he had a big belief in South Africa, South Africa products, South African people, who and what we are. Mm-hmm. And when I stayed with him, look, I lived with him for just over two and a half years in that. And when he came, he said, look, he wants to turn this into a presidential guest house and make it spectacular.
I said, oh, so it was his idea.
No, it was his idea. I need to give credit where it's due. And I turned around and he said, would you like to stay on? I said, gee, without a doubt, I'd love to. I mean, I know the house and that. And he said to me, let them come feel South Africa. It was actually him who pulled this. He said, this house is beautiful. At that stage, it was immaculate. He says, it's right here. It's safe. It's where we are. It's down the road from Union Buildings. And they can experience our people, our traditions, and who and what we are.
Yeah, you see, Pretoria is such a beautiful city. And from that vantage point, you get to see the magnificence of it. It's got these hills. It's got the jacaranda trees. It's got all the embassies. It's really a very refined place. And that house is probably the most refined place in Pretoria. I mean, you've got this amazing driveway up to the house itself.
Beautiful.
With trees along. You wouldn't think this is in the middle of a city. And then it opens up and there's this paved sort of area and fountains and all kinds of things, these gardens, these magnificent gardens on either side. And then this gabled house. It's very South African. It couldn't be anywhere else in the world.
No.
And then I'm sure that inside there was, you know, a sumptuousness and a level of dignity and beauty that kind of showed off the best of South Africa as well.
You could feel it.
Yeah.
I mean, you walked in there and our history, our past, everything as you walk in, there's this big, I don't know if you can call it an aura, this whole beautiful feeling. And you walk in and as you open the doors, you look up, it's just the wow factor.
Yeah, like a big staircase and all
that. Absolutely stunning. And I mean, the thing is that when all these presidents and celebrities and them came in, I said to him, President Mandela lived in this house. I mean, doof. I mean,
immediately
that man can live in that house. Sure. Anybody can live in the house.
So how long did he live there?
He lived there for about 2.5 years roughly. Yeah.
Wow.
And he was happy and content. But you know where he was very clever is that when he spoke about South Africa now, there's a part in my book. I mean, I still see a lot of the bodyguards in that today. I mean, there's still a lot of
friends.
So he
didn't stay in the other house?
Not at all. No.
Who stayed in that house?
No one.
No one?
No. He would have, for argument's sake, if the guest house was full after he left, like for argument's sake when Michael Jackson came. Because the presidential guest house had already a dignitary in it, he would then host people at Mhlanga-Ndlovu.
Yeah.
But he didn't stay there, no.
So who moved into Mhlanga-Ndlovu first? Was it Thabo Mbeki?
Yeah, he went from there, and then he moved down to Oliver Tambo House.
Where's Oliver Tambo House?
So, as you just before you drive up the road that goes to the side gate number 10 into Brunterian Estate,
yeah.
On the left-hand side, there's a big house. You can see it from Church Street. Hmm. So it's sort of part of the estate, but not on the estate.
So Thabo lived there?
Yeah, Thabo
lived there. Didn't stay in Mhlanga-Ndlovu?
No.
So who stays there now?
No one. I mean, even the guest house, since we've left, the guest house has also been open.
So nobody's staying in these houses?
No, they're empty.
When did this thing start? Was it Madiba who decided he was going to spend a lot more time at his Houghton house, even though he was president? And then Thabo Mbeki also had a house here in Kelani. Jacob Zuma has his house in Forest Town. Cyril obviously has, you know, lots of houses as well.
Yeah.
So they don't use the official residences unless it's for state functions. In other words, they don't sleep there.
Correct, yeah. Look, what happened was with President Mandela, he said, when we were there, he said to me, would you like to come to Houghton? We were just during the conversation. I said, you tell me where and I'll be there. And he said, look, he wants to invite all his guests here. He knows me and he trusts me. So it's easier for him to welcome guests there.
Yeah, it's like a facility. It's a place where you can do this stuff. It's owning your own conference center, effectively.
But during the day, I mean, when he was at Union Buildings, he'd come for breakfast, go to Union Buildings, come back for lunch, go to Union Buildings. And before he went home, he'd stop off for dinner and go. So even though we didn't have dignitaries in there, the president would use the guest house continuously, whether it was private meetings, whether it was lunches or
and
breakfast.
And Thabo Mbeki used it a lot as well.
Oh, Thabo Mbeki used it all the time. I must be very honest with you. Yeah.
Now, this is interesting, Brett, because you're not only in charge of the place in terms of being like the estate manager, effectively, but you're also the chef.
Yes, correct, yeah.
Now, those seem like two very, very important jobs. How did you manage both?
I was very blessed. The man who taught me, Christian Michel, when he trained me, we were trained as chefs, sort of laundry, butchery. We're trained through the whole aspect of stuff.
So you were like a super butler.
Yeah, there we go. That's it. And we would like chef in suits. I know it sounds stupid. You run, take your shoe jacket off.
In England, they would call you a Lord Chamberlain. I mean, the Chamberlain is the guy who's in charge of all the butlers.
Yeah.
He's like the one who runs the palace.
Yeah. And the thing was, also, you must remember when the dignitaries came over, they didn't want a lot of people in their house.
Yeah.
So upstairs, sort of, there was only myself and my staff who could go upstairs. So they didn't want all these South Africans around.
Yeah. Also, people, asking for photographs and autographs and that kind of crap. You don't need that. So we're talking about not only state leaders, but we're talking about celebrities too, like Quincy Jones, you mentioned, Michael Jackson earlier, Pavarotti.
Naomi Campbell.
They stayed in this house?
That's correct, yeah.
Did Naomi Campbell leave a mess? Because I know stories about her. I met her a couple of times. She was a mess.
I couldn't stand her.
Yeah.
It's the only person...
I'm so pleased you're honest about this, because, you know, some people will tell stories afterwards and they'll go, everyone was wonderful, and you just know they're talking shit.
Yeah. No, that's the only person I do say something bad about in the book.
Yeah. Well, because she deserves it.
Oh, she was such a bitch.
I've met her a few times.
And, I mean, she treated for a day and a half, she treated me like trash. And when the president arrived, obviously, when he arrived and went up the stairs, there was a sort of place where they had to wait. They couldn't fetch him at the car.
Protocol.
So, yeah, I'd take him up and he'd be standing there. Myself and John Raiders are there. And he turned around and he said to her, you've met my white son. And like she looks around. I mean, like, I'm the only white guy there. Hello. And he says, well, he looked after me since 94. And she fell on his, I thought I can kick you in the face.
No, it's really just a horrible human being.
Hey?
But the rest of them, I mean, Michael Jackson, you get to meet these people. I mean, to me, Michael Jackson is, and I never got to meet him, but even if I had, it would have been weird because this guy was larger than life. He was such a strange character.
No, let's talk about, Michael Jackson got me through school. I mean, we've all got that guy that we all like, oh, it's my singer. Yeah, my wife's got Prince. I had Michael Jackson.
Sure.
And that was the day I was doing a function. I said to the president, please, man, this is my man. I mean, can I escape from the guest house? Give me an hour. I'd like to come. And I walked into the room and him and Michael Jackson were sitting there and he called me in. And I was so excited to meet him. I mean, I'm expecting this aura, this big, huge person. And I'm like, Michael, sir, you got me through school. And I started going on. And he was like, wee, 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 wee. Yeah. And I looked and I was like so disappointed.
Tiny little voice.
Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, Brad, you bring 200,000 people to their knees.
Yeah.
That was sad.
What a human being, though. I mean, you know, I agree with you. The presence kind of, it's always going to be a letdown when you meet the actual person.
Like Pavarotti, he had it. He had it on the
Did
stage.
He
had
it's it off. Big man, huh?
He had it.
I heard that he, you had to be careful because he could break a toilet. He was so big. You didn't have any of those problems, did
no,
you?
No, none of those.
I heard they had to build a special toilet for him towards the end of his life. No, really.
Seriously, I didn't know that
Big
part.
Man, you're lucky those toilets at Printurian survived.
It's like everyone says, what did Michael Jackson eat? I say nothing. What did Pavarotti eat? Everything. You know what I'm saying to you?
Sure. Okay, did Pavarotti, what kind of order did he place? Hello, brother, this is Luciano. I'm you know which room. I need 7 chickens. 4 turkeys, one side of the entire side of the pig, 14 legs of lamb. What did he order?
What I did for him, I was very clever. I did these massive silver platters of buffet food.
Oh wow!
Everything. So he just polished it off. He just went. I mean,
Ate like a pig.
But the great thing is when he was finished, he oh, it was so beautiful. Oh, he liked it. It was worth it.
I mean, so he was appreciative.
No, he was a beautiful man. No, no, seriously. Okay. Also, Quincy Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Tell
I mean, there
about
wasn't
him.
One meal that I served that he didn't sing afterwards. Eh? He would like come up with these funny raps. He had his nephew there and that, and would serve the food, and he'd always sing and joke and everything else like that. Look, Naomi was at the table, so we needed a bit more personality.
Right. There. No, for sure. Okay, kings and queens and emperors and presidents. Who are the ones that stand out for you?
Okay, first of all, I love the queen.
Yes.
Because when the doors closed, she was a granny, a woman, a normal lady. Mm-hmm. Remember, we saw them behind closed doors.
Yes.
That was amazing. She was beautiful, amazing. Even the way the staff treated her. You can see it was more a mother, beautiful, loving figure than this hierarchy, be afraid of her. Mm-hmm. When I met Prince Charles, I wasn't really looking forward to that one.
Why? He thought he was going to be a boring asshole.
Yeah, look what the media say in that.
Sure.
And when he came, he said, look, my mom said, thank you for looking after him. So I thought, okay, there's a bit of communication there. And we took him into the house, and that night everyone was settled. I had a knock on the door, and me, with my piti pant and my T-shirt. And they said, the prince wants to see you. And I'm like, can I get changed? They said, no, just like you are.
Oh, my God.
So I thought, okay. Now you're walking down, are you jittery? Because you don't know what to expect. And you read the media, and he says to me, do you drink whiskey? I said, yeah, I drink whiskey, you know, kind of thing. And we sat down, and his chief bodyguard was there, somebody from Project.
You had a whiskey with Prince Charles in your PT shorts.
And let me tell you something, the funniest man.
He's great.
Incredible. Yeah. I didn't expect it. He
good sense of humor. Sure.
The next few days, you just look at him, and you're waiting for the next.
I heard, though, he could be a bit picky. I mean, like someone said to me, he travels with his entire bedroom of furniture wherever he goes now. He might not have done it then, but now he expects his whole, you know, his same chest of drawers, and they have to load all this stuff onto ships and boats and planes for him.
Oh, we didn't have that.
Easy guy.
Huh. I promise you, a lot of people say, what did they request? You must remember, before they came along, I cook South African food in a sense that
right.
I know what they ate and what they liked. And
so what do you show off when you, because what is South African food? I mean, to someone like you who was in, I read people's take on what South Africa is. But it doesn't matter what I read and what they write. What matters is that you're the guy who introduces these famous international people to South Africa in terms of food.
Yeah.
Now, what do you choose? What's our food?
Well, it's simple. Like, for argument's sake, if we take the royalty and that, you find out what their likes and dislikes. Obviously, you get the list. Then, I mean, they loved fish. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I'd get hold of the harbor down in Cape Town and I'd say, what fresh fish have you got now?
Wow. They'd fly it up.
Then they'd fly up the fish. But then every dish that I served came with a story. Look, this fish is from this cut. This is the water fish. This is when. And people enjoyed when they ate the food to know which part of the country it came from. And for argument's sake, also used to bring the cultures into it. I mean, we've got so many cultures in it. Say, look, this is why we did the babuti on the side. And babuti comes from this culture. So you give people. So every meal that they had came with a bit of a story and things like that. And they absolutely loved it. So it wasn't a plate of food that came out of a fridge. It was a plate of food that came with a story to explain our country and who and what we are. So when they meet, for argument's sake, to give example, that when they meet the Bahat brothers in that time, they're like, oh, okay, the biryani comes from their culture. You know what I'm saying? Like a bit of more of our country experience.
Now, those two are fun. Isop and Aziz. They were fun people, right?
They were the best.
Hilarious.
I was taking my son to school the one morning, and here is Aziz walking down Church Street.
Yeah.
And
he did this. I went to the movies one night, and he and his wife, I was at varsity.
Yeah.
And he and his wife were standing in the queue with everybody else. He was a minister.
Correct.
He was standing in the queue to buy movie tickets.
Yeah, that's him. Because I stopped. I said to him, what are you doing here? No, his wife said he needs to start exercising.
No security detail. Nothing.
So I said to him, what time is your meeting? He says, no, my first meeting's at 7:45. I said, minister, you're not going to make it. Eh? I said, you better jump in the combi. But that's who they were. Yeah. I mean, the Pahat brothers were absolutely.
Aziz Pahad invited me once to the Union Buildings because I love old buildings.
Yes.
Right? And he said to me, come and have a look. Gave me a tour. I said to him, don't you have things to be doing? He said, yeah, they can wait. I'll get them done. Gave me a tour of the Union Buildings. I was a nobody.
That
guy took the trouble. He took the time. But nice people.
Mandela boys.
Yeah.
Mandela boys.
Yeah.
They were all those guys that worked for President Mandela, all had the same kind of energy in that.
Well, they'd come out of the struggle.
Yeah.
They'd come out of not being used to much in terms of being bowed to and scraped to. They didn't have a superiority complex over everyone else. Me, I'm a big deal minister. They were nice people. Anyway, listen, to get back to Madiba. So what did he like to eat?
As long as it was healthy and South African, he ate it. He never was fussy. Obviously, look, we had to stay away from natural fats and that. When the president came in, we had doctors from around the world. We had people from Asia, and that all came and looked at him because obviously they wanted to give this man the rest of a good life and everything.
Yes, sure.
So they'd all come and say, look, keep to this, keep to this. So I took advice from everybody and I put it into one box. So I knew what to feed him, how to feed him. I mean, obviously his naughties were lamb chops, which he wasn't like because of the fat and everything else.
Sure,
like that.
But he liked that, huh?
That he loved. I mean, beef Wellington was also another favorite. Eh?
Oh.
Tomato soup. You know, the funny thing is that so many people have written books about what he ate and what he didn't like. I read a thing in New York Times about somebody cooked for him and the food he used to eat and things like that. And I thought maybe this was prior 1990s. You know what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
He was also one of those people, you could have given him French toast and he would have enjoyed it. No problem, eh?
Yeah, I mean, what do you cook for a president for breakfast?
Well, most presidents was obviously fruit.
Uh-huh.
Always start off with fruit. I mean, that's who we and what we are. I do kippers. Uh-huh. I'd stay away from bacons and that. I'd bring in the bacon part and that. Different kinds of eggs. If they wanted something saucy, I'd obviously do like a sauce hollandaise or bolognese because it's butter. It's natural kind of
stuff.
Did
you love doing this stuff?
Believe it or not, I say.
Yeah, no, it's not sad at all. You'd have to love it to do this because you're not cooking for your family. Some of the time the guy's in a hurry. He's in and out. He needs to eat something quickly. He doesn't really stop and care and take the trouble to say thank you after every meal. He can't always. And he's the most important man in the country at this stage.
Yeah.
So you're just churning it out, really. If you didn't love it, you would have been miserable.
No, for sure. I never knew I had it in me. I mean, I found the profession by mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, I say to people, how did you meet your wife or your best friends and things like that? It's all by mistake.
That's right.
That's how it happens. It's just right place, right time.
Tell me about the Pope. Ever have the Pope around?
Oh, we had the Pope, yeah. He didn't stay with us. Yeah. He was there every day, though. The reason why he couldn't, because it had to do with holy ground. And
was this
like
the John Paul II Pope?
That's correct. Yes,
okay.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And he was also very pleasant.
You cook for him?
No.
No.
No, also.
Did you meet him though?
Yeah, I dealt with him the whole time. Okay. The part of the guest house was I used to meet the people, take them through, sort of as interaction between the dignitary and our protocol, if that makes sense. So we all worked together.
So did you know how to address all these people?
I had to learn, yes. So every time someone came in, I'd get a book and
you'd have to see whether it was Your Holiness, Your Eminence, Your Majesty, Your Highness.
Which way to fold your legs, which way to put your hands and,
right,
and everything else like that.
Sia likes this stuff. He wants to know how to do all
that. Oh, this is fancy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Huh?
So to certain people, you need to.
Everyone's got their own cultures. And
so
that.
What do you do for the Pope?
The Pope? Oh, it's the way you stand. It's the way you hold your hands, the way you cross your hands
and
over.
You address him as Your Holiness.
Your Holiness, yeah. Yeah.
Because folding your arms or crossing your arms in the incorrect manner might convey something.
Well, it might be disrespectful.
Ooh.
Would you want to know how one of our protocol people greeted the Pope?
Tell us.
So she was, I know people heard of it, it's in the book, but I had to put in there, she had really a beautiful fiery lady in that, and at the last day in that the Pope was coming along and giving everybody a gold coin that was sort of involved in that. And she came around the corner all nice and prim and proper. She obviously studied her stuff. And as she came through, her heel hooked on the thing. And next thing, doof, over.
She fell down.
Legs in the air, showing us the glory and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And here we're standing.
And the Pope's right there?
And I'm on the left, Pope in the middle, John Raiders on the right. And he turns around, he looks at it, he says, well, I've never been greeted like that before.
All right, that's nice. I mean, for the Pope, that must have been a good thing. I appreciate that she gave him a good show. That's nice. That's South African hospitality at its best. You didn't even have to go to teasers.
See, that's how we do it in South Africa, controversially.
Now, what about the – let's talk about some of these ministers and presidents. You ever cook for the former president, Jacob Zuma?
He came to state banquets.
Anything in particular he liked or didn't like?
Well, at that stage, he wasn't really
– important enough.
Anyone.
I hear you.
You know what I'm saying to
you? I see what you mean.
He did borrow my my suit jacket that night.
The
first
time
he came, he did, yes.
Because he didn't have a jacket.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, obviously, there's still a level that we need to stick to and things like that.
Of course. What about the Thabo Mbeki era?
Oh, I love the Thabo Mbeki
era. Okay, so he was a very smart, sensible, dignified man.
Businessman.
Liked things a certain way, right?
He was a businessman.
Okay.
Through and through.
Yeah.
It's funny, with the Madiba era, it was more family focus.
Yes.
country and everything else like that. The Thabo Mbeki era was more business. Let's get the country on track. Let's drive it correctly. You know, those kind of things. Yeah. And small things mattered. We had a whole lot of bodyguards racing up that long driveway with all these VR6s and they're braking and skidding and things like that. And him and Tokyo Sukali went to the front door and called the people in and they were dismissed right there and then.
Wow.
Because that is wasting state money.
Yes, absolutely.
And the thing of just having parties and how much you can drink and all these kind of things were all clipped in the wings. They were businessmen.
Really? They didn't want to waste, huh?
No waste, no nothing. I loved.
You reckon Cyril's going to be a bit like that?
Well, I dealt a lot with Cyril those days and that. But he was very similar to Thabo Mbeki. Same way of thinking, same way of dealing with things and that.
All right, drinking. Let's talk about the Russians.
Oh, the Russians, the boys. Yeah, they put our South Africans on their asses. Eh?
Yeah.
So the banquet started everything. So it's almost like sort of security handover to the next security. So when you walk through, you go through the pool room, those security guys are there. So we always like to put the bodyguards together. You know, it's like South Africans. You all have to measure willies kind of thing. And that.
Yeah, sure.
And they're sitting drinking and everyone's sort of just staring at each other. No one's really saying much. And the one bodyguard says to me, hey.
Is this Boris Yeltsin, Vladimir Putin's people? Who are we talking about?
Yes, it was.
Was it Boris?
Boris.
Because Boris was a big drinker.
Yeah, and just under Boris.
Oh, okay, like the deputy president.
Yeah, those. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
All right, okay.
So the guy looks, he says, hey, Soti, go and fetch that Mampur from Willem Prinsloo.
He's talking to you.
Yeah, talking to me. I said, sure, man, no problem. Go downstairs and I fetch it. And he says, Leicester.
Who's Willem Prinsloo?
No, Willem Prinsloo farm. No. That's where they make the Mampur, apparently.
Oh, okay. The farm.
You need to go to the Mampur first.
All right. Yes. Okay.
So, we went there. So he says to this Russian, listen to me nicely. He says, drink this. So the Russian says, okay. So they give him a shot. So the Russian looks at him and says, what's this?
Yeah.
So he empties out his mug. He says, give me a mug.
Oof.
And he takes a
Mampur.
Mug. I swear on my life. He takes this mug. And he shoots it. He says, not bad. Give me another one. Shoots two. Now, I'm standing and I'm waiting for this man to see his ass. It's like coming down a slippery slope.
This is about 90% proof.
I promise you.
Yeah.
Then he says to the bodyguard, okay, your chance. And he took his no name. It's a clear bottle, poured it in, gave it to the bodyguard, and the bodyguard had it. And he sat there. Everybody had glasses on. He took them off. His eyes were watering. Doof.
Fell over.
That was it.
Jesus.
And I mean,
those Russians, they don't mess around, hey?
When they played tennis, they took a case of whiskey to the tennis court, four guys, and they would play whiskey, and they would down. They passed out. At once, I went to our two security guards there, Donnie and Dupa. I said, "Listen, go check on these guys. They haven't moved for a while." And they went there, and they were on the tennis court. And then they wake up, they pick up their stuff, go sleep for an hour, and they go again.
Now, do these important dignitaries and their various security and other details? Do they have time off, or are they always on the go? Are they literally waking up and going from meeting to meeting, event to event, or do they actually get to chill at the pool, or get to sleep late, or get to walk around the gardens? What kind of free time do these people
have? No, they did have free time. So what would happen is the first 2 days when they arrived, they would be hit with meetings and things like that. Then they would sort of have 2 days of off time, which is supposed to be their time, and then sort of the last 2 days would be sort of the conclusion of everything in that. That's why the guest house was so important, because they were home.
Yeah, because they had a place they could actually let loose a little
bit.
What do these bedrooms look like? Are they very, very fancy?
Stunning. Absolutely. Like, if you can think, like you're speaking about the architecture and things like that. Hey? So it was still traditional architecture, but obviously the best of the best in there. You know what I mean? The best TVs, the best linen, the beautiful bathrooms. It was spectacular.
Were you on call 24/7? In other words, did people arrive at 3 a.m. and you had to be ready for
That's correct, yeah.
Really?
That's right. So they would, that's why people said, would you do it again? No, I wouldn't. I mean, 18, 19 hours a day, it did kill me. And at that stage, I wasn't there for the glamour and that. That's why, even in my book, most of my photographs are photos that other people took.
No, you're a very humble guy. I can't imagine you were looking for attention.
I never ever did.
See, you don't find people like that very easily. That's why Madiba wanted to hold on to you, because you weren't in it for yourself. You were actually in there to do a service to him and to the country.
I didn't see it then. I must be very honest.
Yeah, but you were doing it. It wasn't about you, in other words.
Yeah, I was very honored. No, really I was.
So, Brett, how does this work with having a family of your own? I mean, did they live there on the estate with you?
Yes. Yeah, so in the presidential guest house, there was a sort of the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first 2 months, I would drive up and down. And then Mary, who worked for the president, came and said, look, this is ridiculous. why don't you take the West Wing? So we lived in the West Wing from about, I'd say, June 94 until 2000, until we moved out.
So does this mean your kids, when they were on their way to school, they'd sometimes bump into the president on the way down the stairs?
Well, my son met basically the president before I did, in a certain way.
Yeah.
In a sense that the president would walk around the house at night. You could hear it. I mean, it's a big house. I mean, you sure. could hear it.
So he would walk around in his dressing gown.
Creak and things like that. Yeah. And one night I went to the president, look, and I get you more tea and things like that. He's like, no, I'm fine, I'm fine. I said, are you okay? I said, look, you're welcome to come to my side. I mean, any time. But there was more like a, you're welcome to come to my side,
yeah, sure.
polite invite. And then the one day there was a knock on the door, and here stands the president. My wife walked past, she almost convulsed three times. And he sat down, and I was busy cooking. Now the president's behind me, and my son's sitting there, and he's helping my son with homework and that. And he kept on saying, tata, tata, tata. And I'm like, son, that's President Mandela, President Mandela. So he's like, no, I told him to call me Tata. I'm like, when? He says, no, he normally climbs out this window, he runs along the roof, and he jumps in, he comes and talks to me in the room. I was like, oh,
wow.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I didn't know about that.
Wow.
So that's the kind of guy
he was. Some kind of story, man.
Yeah.
Jesus. Did he ever raid the fridge at night?
No.
No.
He was such a healthy, such a disciplined man. I mean, sense of humor in the president. He was flying over to Asia. And I had 2 days off, and I was looking at buying a house for investment. So I ran to Standard Bank in Brooklyn, and I'm standing in the queue there. And that's when Vodacom sponsored phones. They gave him 10 phones then. And the phone rings, and I'm like hoping it's Mary. I'm like, hi, how are you? He's like, hi, you who?
Oh, it's the president.
I'm like, hi, president. And he's like, sorry? I said, hi, president. He says, president who? I said, good morning, President Mandela. He says, and is that how you address me? I want to hear it. I said, good morning, President Mandela. How are you? So he starts chuckling. He says, you're around people now. I said, yes. He says, don't you feel silly? He says, I'll ask Mary to phone you later. And he put the phone down.
So he did this just to mess with you. I love that.
That's exactly who and what he was. Yeah.
That is superb. All right. Let's talk about some of these other guests who behaved badly. I mean, maybe not behaved badly, but had odd requests. There was some Saudi Arabian
sheikh
who wanted, what, 6 television sets or 8 in one room?
Yeah, he came. He put, look, in those days, almost close to a million down. He wanted satellite dishes everywhere. He had a bank of TVs. His blankets that he had, I mean, we're talking about, what, in the 90s, was 5,200 rand a blanket. Which you would only sleep on once.
What kind of blanket is this 5,200 rand? What is it made of? Camel's pubic hair? And unicorn's horns?
I know. I hear what you're saying. It's, I don't know. It's when you like, again, one of those things, you get the blanket, you're like, is it worth it, you know? And then you'll sleep on it. The next day, you throw it away, eh?
So did you keep it?
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah. You're still sleeping on it, right?
No. They're worn out of it now. No, it's funny. When he left, he says, you see all of this? He says, it's yours. I said, can you put that on paper? And he did. And I mean, when they arrived there, they wanted rand. So they came out with these 2 big bank bags of dollars. And they said, can you go change this? So I had a friend in Absa Bank, shot down to Absa Bank in town. And I changed and I bought these bags back. In the one bag, there was about 42,000 rand. But it's not big money. And they take it and they're like, yes. I said, do you want to count? I said, no. They take this. This is a small bag. I said, yeah, it's 42,000 rand. He says, no, it's for you. I said, no, I can't take it. I can't accept it. I'm a government official. He says, well, then you found it. That's yours. No.
Wow.
That's money, eh?
What a story.
That's
those
money.
These guys have a lot of cash lying around, huh?
No, that's big money.
And I'm curious, like anyone who you had to get off the golf course late at night because they were drunk running around?
Very, everyone was very scared of President Mandela.
Yeah.
No matter how big they were and how important they thought they were all scared of him.
They didn't want to get into trouble with him.
It's like when I wrote the book, what am I going to call the book? And Annie from Jonathan Walters, she says, Mandela's Appreciation Club. And I thought, wow, that put my whole thing in context because everyone came here just to meet him. So it's almost like everyone was too scared to get in trouble because Big Brother's going to give you a hiding kind of thing.
Fidel Castro gave you a cigar?
Yeah, that's also one of those funny stories. He came in without me knowing. Apparently, he was flying over. I heard afterwards. But what happened was I was sleeping, and obviously, we're in the safest place in the country, so doors and windows open. And I locked up that night. That morning, I hear these funny noises, like these doors closing, and something's not right. So I'm only in my PJs, and I run around, and I'm sprinting around to the front door to find out what's going on. And he has all these cars standing and everything. And I'm thinking, crap, did I forget something?
Yeah, and because you've got a schedule and you know who's arriving.
And I'm panicking and I'm running, but I'm walking towards him and my brain's telling me
and you're still in your pajamas.
I'm sitting in my pajamas. And here's President Mandela and Phil Castro standing at the front door. And as I get there, Mary turns on. She says, look, we didn't want to bug you. We just needed it for an hour for a quick meeting. Everything's fine. And here I'm standing. Here's President and Fidel Castro. And he looks at me. He takes two cigars out of his pocket. He's like, this is for you. I'm like, thank you.
And did you smoke it there and then in your PJs?
No, I just stood there like shocked. It's like, you could have hit me with a wet fish that day, man.
That's incredible.
I didn't know. But you see, this is what I keep telling people going back to the Madiba era. This was acceptable. We were human. We were human.
You have Bill Clinton there?
No, we didn't have. We had Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
We had Al Gore there.
Yes.
And everything else like that. We didn't have him. I'm trying to think. He was also, I mean.
What did Hillary eat? Do you remember?
Yeah, she just ate. Look, when she came here, she wasn't like on the top of the food chain.
No.
So
she still isn't.
So whatever anybody ate. Trump. Yeah. So when it came to a lot of these kind of people that weren't on top of the food chain and that, sometimes you get these difficult people sit down and say, oh, I want this. I said, yeah. Oh, that's funny. President Mandela normally likes that. Like, oh, we'll have that. You know what I mean?
Sure. So you just put them in their place.
Yeah,
in
we just use the escape clause kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what kind of really big events must have happened during that time. Let's talk about that inauguration banquet.
Sure, that was huge.
Because everybody was here.
Yes, that was huge. That was massive. It was, that was sort of my introduction into the socialite world.
What was your role there?
So when we arrived, our role was to look after President Mandela and sort of the direct sort of the Tokyo Sekwari, Ramaphosa, Matthews Poza, those kind of people. And we were supposed to look after the house itself, okay? Where only the VVIPs would come there. So even if you look at all the dignitaries around the world, there was only a certain amount of them allowed into the guest house.
Right.
I mean, otherwise…
The rest you'd put up in hotels or whatever.
Yeah, but also just to have meetings, because otherwise there's too many. I mean, there were so many famous people in that. So we looked after them. And when we sort of – things started coping and everything else like that, then we said, look, we're getting involved in helping chefing also towards the main banquet. Because you can imagine what they try to do was nice. They try to get a whole lot of different companies together to do the whole banquet, which also doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a bit of a mix-up then, right?
Yeah.
Nobody really knows what's going on.
And Christian was very good because he's been doing this for all these years and that. And he sort of took lead on it and – assisted. So we just made sure that the main tables got their food, the people we knew what they liked and didn't like. We knew all their requirements and things. So we sort of looked after those kind of people in that.
Right. And the rest would be taken care of by the caterers.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So Sia, you would have been at a caterer's table. You wouldn't have got Brett cooking for you.
There goes me feeling special now. No.
You would have got a table in the sun.
So Robert Mugabe.
Okay.
He stayed a couple of times.
What a stunning man. I'm not political.
No,
please. I'm not
Tell
political.
Me the truth.
I'm not a political person whatsoever. I always claim not to be part of politics and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But as a person, he could have been President Mandela's older brother.
Huh.
He you know that aura that the president had? I mean, you've met him. You know that aura. President Mugabe was exactly the same. He had this beautiful aura, this great knowledge. He was so kind to every single person. He never got out of car without thanking the drivers and his own people, eh? And everything else like that. He was absolutely amazing.
Huh.
I can see you frowning. I know it doesn't make sense.
I believe, listen, I mean, we hear a lot of things about what these people are like in person, and sometimes they're very nice people, and what they do in their countries is a whole different matter.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you're making any of this up. Why did you stop?
I stopped. I got to about 2000, and all of a sudden, sort of the celebrity – people coming to the country started slowing down. President Mbeki and them weren't very keen on the entertainment part of everything else and that. The guest house was being used less and less and less and that. And it was going to be sort of a state banquet a month, if I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it wasn't enough.
It wasn't just that. It was also the whole interaction, and it gets to the stage you can't put that kind of money into a house that just stands. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. In other words, you felt like you were just keeping this white elephant going.
Correct. And then, I mean, any day, any auditor will come along and say, where's all this money going? Because you must remember every single day we had to be ready as if tomorrow was going to be a state visit and things like
that. Right. So there's a huge amount of wastage.
Yeah. Incredible. And I sat with my wife. I went and sat with Mary and that. So Mary said, well, isn't there another part of government you'd like to go into? And you know, Izzy, what can we do for you for what you've done for us? And I said to Mary, you know, I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank the ANC, but I think I did my role.
You're done.
Yeah, I did my share.
And then since then, what have you been up to?
Well, after that, I was actually
written a book.
You know, the book was a mistake. Eh?
Why?
Because what happened was I was never going to write a book. I had all these fond memories. And last year, January, I got to the restaurant. The restaurant was booked out. And next thing I walk in, there's a whole lot of people, some people from Protocol and Foreign Affairs, but all the old people and that. And there was one guy's birthday, and they just all wanted to get together. And they said, write a book. I said, what do you mean? They said, Brett, the amount of good times we had there. Write a book.
And you thought, all right, good idea. But
I sat down in the beginning of Feb. 3 weeks later, I had a book. So I went to my wife. I said, and now? She says, what's that? I said, oh, for my kids and my grandkids, you know. Mm. And someone said, send it to publishers. So I sent a chapter to each publisher. And the same day, Jonathan Ball got hold of me and said, oh, we'd love to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I thought it was like a newspaper. You know, you write a book 3 weeks later, doof, there's a book on the shelf. They had it. They edited it. And, yeah, it came out.
And did you get a lot of blowback from people?
No, because you must remember, I didn't say bad things. Number one, I wasn't controversial.
I've got Naomi Campbell's agent on the line right now. She wants to have a word.
And I didn't lie.
Okay, but that's important because often people who do the kind of, who have the access that you had, won't write a book. You know, they won't necessarily want anyone to hear these. They'll tell the stories to their friends and family, but that's it. So you didn't get any heat from anybody about this?
Nothing. Because a lot of the people, obviously I sent it to the ministers that were there. That I still got a contact with. I said, look, I've written a book. And they all came back and they said, fantastic. Because it's good stories. It's telling people.
You're not trying to knock anybody.
No, it's not worth it. You know what? There's happy stories. And to tell people who they really are. I mean, these actually do go to the toilet. And they do wear pajamas.
Yeah, sure.
But we don't see that.
No, I mean, you might have to clean up the next morning if they make a mess like Boris Yeltsin's people. That's a whole different story. So tell me about your restaurant in Pretoria.
So what I did was, I was actually on a radio interview with Rian Jacaranda.
Okay.
And then I was doing catering with Essence Catering and that. And he turned around and he said, well, where can we eat your food? Because we can't just get functions. And I went home, I said to my wife, let me open up a restaurant.
Got to do this, yeah.
So what I did is I opened up a restaurant. I served the food that I served those presidents and royalties and celebrities and that, but at a reasonable price. So people can come in and say, well, what did this person eat? And you can actually eat what they ate.
That's great. See, you're interested, I can tell.
Exactly.
You see, it goes back to them going to the toilet and wearing pajamas. You need to experience what they experienced.
Can we focus on the fancy part? It's great.
What's the largest function you've done catering for?
Catering was 25,000 people.
Jeez. How's that possible? 25,000 people. Where was that?
That was at the IEC elections at Pretoria Showgrounds. And it was 3-course in that.
Wait, like the F&B Stadium is a little over 25,000. That's like 27 or 28,000 people. Yeah, so that's essentially an entire stadium.
I did it out of stupidity because they wanted a whole lot of catering companies to get together and they weren't prepared to.
Wow.
And I thought I'd just do what I always do, jump in head first.
And you must have – I can only imagine the stock you order.
Yeah, there were 8-ton trucks driving all the time. You know, when you talk about tons of eggs, yeah. it's a lot of eggs, I promise you. But I pulled it off. I mean, they were happy. The government
well done.
Came. But that was through Dr. Bam, thanks to her.
Yeah, Brigalia Bam, right. She's terrific. She's still around, Brigalia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's still around. She's not in government anymore. Mm. I think she's retired now, but what an incredible woman.
Yeah, she
met
helped
her at
me with that
election. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this Christian Michel. You mentioned him once or twice now. Who is Christian Michel?
So Christian Michel, in the 50s, South Africa bought a whole lot of when we say maitre d's, overseas maitre d's are chefs, and they're people that know the floor, maitre d's and chefs from overseas into South Africa to sort of bring – culture is not the right word.
Well, a level of French sophistication.
There we go. Much, much better.
Sure,
thank
because
you.
Everyone, even in America, they realize that the French are the best at certain things.
Yeah.
And Americans don't like to admit they're not the best at anything.
So his dad actually got a contract in World War II to supply meat to South Africa in World War II. They had a train that ran around and hunted and that. And when these people came in, obviously his dad knew the government people. And
right.
Christian came in as sort of the first executive chef of South Africa.
Hmm.
Opened up the diplomatic guest house.
Right.
Where sort of the National Party had all the people over that no one knew about. It was one of those undercover things.
Everything was secret.
Everything.
Yeah.
And I bumped into Christian at a restaurant just after when I left school. He enjoyed the way I cooked and my cooking mechanism and everything that I did. And asked if he could train me. I mean, obviously the first few times I met him, he said, come to my house. Do you want to be trained? I thought pedophile. I mean, who wants to just give something to somebody? It didn't make sense. But yet when I got there and I met his wife and she's like, oh, but I know you. I said, no, I don't know you. And she helped me at my christening to find out we're old family friends.
Huh.
And he couldn't have kids. And he said, well, let me pass my knowledge on to you.
And this started a whole life for you that you didn't expect.
Didn't expect. My dad, obviously, I came from a very wealthy background. And when I left school, I was going to travel the world. I got given a kit bag and said, mm-hmm. go find a life, which was all part of making me who and what I am today. And then when the ANC came in, Pick Botha phoned Christian and said, look, you're not South African. You're a Frenchman. You're in neutral ground. Come to the guest house. And he said, look, I have retired. I'm only going to be there 2-3 months, but I'll bring in the person I'm training. And that's how this whole thing started.
Wow. Look at this. So it's almost like you – and your timing was perfect.
Everything.
You've been there for like the Mandela years. Perfect.
But yet at that stage of my life, I thought, why live? You know what I mean? You're only seeing, you know, from rags – from riches to rags. You don't see the positive. And then years later, you look back and say, wow, there was a plan.
How does your wife feel about all of this?
My wife's very, when I say she's very chilled. She's never wanted the limelight. She didn't want anything. Even when I wrote the book, she's like, don't go get into trouble and don't go do this. And you know what I'm saying to you? Because we've never been those big, flashy, out there kind of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, look, you know, in my book, a lot of times I speak about a lot of people that deserve recognition. I said, you know, my goal, even for them, like she'll say, how many books you sold? I said, I actually still don't know how many books I've sold, because if people can just read the book and see the people that I saw, that's it. It's worth
it. Sounds great. So you published the book in 2018.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right. So is it available now?
Yes, it's been out 2 weeks.
Very good.
2 weeks. Exclusive Books is doing very well with it.
Very nice. Go and get Mandela Appreciation Club. I love this. This is a terrific idea. I'm so pleased you wrote this book. Those guys are right that called you in there.
No, thank you. I'm still a bit nervous. I mean, I just passed school, man. Come on.
Oh, come on. What
for? I did. I got 82% if you put my 2 years together.
And your sons, they must be very proud.
Well, my young son, yeah, he became a chef.
What's your name? Max. Max. Come over here, Max. Were you the one who was running along the balcony waking Madiba up?
That was my older brother.
That was your older brother. Do you remember any of those years? How old are you now?
I'm 18, sir.
Okay.
No, he was a baby. Eh?
So you were a little baby. But I mean, this is incredible stuff your dad's telling us.
This is mind-blowing, his stories he tells us at night.
So when you hear these things, and you obviously hear about history now when you're at school, does it blow your mind that your dad was around these people all the time while all of this was happening?
Well, honestly, when you hear about it, so it just blows your mind, like you said, and it kind of makes Chef sound like it's a story. It's a fantasy. It's history. It
happened to your dad. Look at this guy. I mean, he could have poisoned Madiba. We would have all been in huge shock. Okay. Can you imagine?
Glad that.
Did you ever give him like that?
Only Gareth.
No, but it's true. I mean, like, listen, you know, we talk about this and we're joking around, but in a lot of places and throughout history, important people have had a taster so that the people who would cook for them wouldn't try to poison them, because the taster would get poisoned first and then they'd know to kill the cook.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, this is not something that you ever thought of, but was there ever a meal that you served that maybe wasn't so great?
No, you know what you're talking about. When I got there,
yeah, like he got the runs from you or something.
No, you must remember one thing with us when I was there. There was no trust, eh? There was no trust. I mean, I cooked for the first few months under AK-47s when they were watching you, didn't trust you, and things like
really?
That.
Really?
I mean, it's in there. I mean, Gigi and Victor. I mean, we I haven't seen them for years, but we became great friends. I mean, I was the whitey, yeah. You must remember. Let's be very honest.
Sure.
They would never say when President Mandela was going to eat there in the beginning. So in the beginning, there was no trust. So you'd cook the food, put it on the table, and you sit there until 2 in the morning. No one pitches, and you take it off. And then the next day, you don't expect them to come, and then they did. So there was sort of an interview over quite a period to see who was. And yes, I was approached by people to say, what are they talking about? Because I was in those meetings. So I would go and serve them. Or if I found it interesting, I'd go stand in the back and listen to it and find out. So yeah, I was approached by a lot of people to find out things. I had people there coming to say, we're from NIA and you need to write what happened last week and we need to test you. And then obviously
They were checking you out.
Yeah, then you phone like a Steve Twitty and then you say, listen, did you see anywhere? No. So there was, you know what I'm saying to you? But it was, when I got the green light, it was the green light.
That's amazing. What a life.
No, I'm blessed. Happy family, great kids. What else?
And the restaurant's going well.
It's going well. Look, in the economy is going well, if it makes sense.
Sure,
to you.
Listen,
you
know if I mean? You're surviving right now, you're doing well.
Yeah, that's just, you know. The only nice thing is I'm meeting so many great people all the time.
Do you ever go back there?
I went back 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I went and saw Jean. I just walked her around.
Who's Jean?
Jean was with us from the beginning. She sort of was a receptionist at the guest house. She's still there. One of the chefs is still there, Victor, that I took over and trained him there. But I don't want to. If you go back, it breaks your heart. I mean,
why? It's not as good as it used to be? It isn't being kept up as well?
All the antiques, the Anton van Vogt statues aren't there. The curtains have been changed. Furniture, the furniture that came over, must be in the 1800s, is gone. The carpets are deteriorated. It's been raided. It's
oh no.
It's nothing that you want to see. I promise you, nothing. The paintings that used to hang on the walls that you spoke about lie outside in a quad in the rain. It's yeah no. So it's almost like going back to your ex-girlfriend. It just doesn't work. Eh?
Yeah, and she's got fat.
So you do know my ex-girlfriend.
Brett, thanks for the visit.
Thank you very much.
What a pleasure to spend time with you.
It's been my honor. Thank you.
Oh, it's lucky to see you and keep well. Very nice to meet you too, Max.
Thank you.
Cool. There we go. Huh, Sia?
Jeez.
What a story, huh?
And I feel like it has way more.
Yeah, go and get the book. Well, the book is chock full of stories. The Mandela Appreciation Club. It's Brett's book. Go and pick it up at good stores now.
This is CliffCentral.com.